Good evening. My name's Jack. I'm a grateful member of CODA.
Hi.
I'm so pleased to have this turnout here. In listening to Chris introduce me, I've had people remind me how quickly I've picked up things in CODA, and there's really a secret to that. And it's, if you show up here sufficiently miserable and desperate, it's a motivation, and it was a motivation to me, and I'll tell you about that. I used to be resentful. Today I'm grateful. I used to be skeptical. Today I'm hopeful. And I used to be judgmental. Today I am, well, I'm still working on that one. This evening I'd like to share with you my story of how that all happened. I want to take you back 5 years ago. 2010 was far and away the worst year of my life. There were so many things that happened to me that year, I had to make a list. I was 64 years old, lonely, angry, miserable, depressed, and desperate. I was a closet atheist for most of my life. I was a loner, a skeptical, critical perfectionist, and I had no close friends. For most of my life, I rarely smiled, and I rarely felt happy. I was married to an alcoholic, and her drinking was getting worse. This was my fourth marriage, and it was failing badly. I always relied on my wife as my best and only friend, so I was friendless at that point. I had stress from legal and financial and medical issues involving aging parents. I was involved in a multi-car, multi-injury accident in which I thought I was going to die as the accident was happening. My stepmother, who had Alzheimer's, died. I had to convince my dad that he needed to move into assisted living. My son died 2 years earlier from a drug and alcohol overdose at the age of 37. I later learned it was a suicide, and I was still grieving his death and didn't know how to process the loss. So there I was in 2010 at my personal lifetime bottom. Going into 2011, I started asking myself, what's wrong with me? I really felt I was just an utter failure. Four marriages failed. Other relationships in between had failed. No friends. I just felt my life at the age of 64 had been a waste. There was no hope for me. I didn't know what to do. I started to ask myself if there was a common denominator in my failed marriages. I'm a very analytical type person, so I figured, okay, I'm going to figure this out. What did all those four women have in common? That was the sober reality for me. Yep, I'm in common. I was finally willing to admit that I must be a part of the problem. And I was determined to figure that out. I've since learned that this is called the gift of desperation. And for a guy who came into this program as an atheist, and I had problems with the God stuff from the beginning, but I've learned that there are substitute words that help me with God. So G-O-D, for me, is the gift of desperation. And that's what I had. It was a gift. I was miserable 4 years ago. But what was handed to me was an absolute gift. Being that miserable, I needed to be that miserable to get motivated to do anything. And I was motivated. Early in my recovery, I heard a speaker, and I've since learned that he's very sarcastic and he's funny, but when I first heard him, some of the things he said I thought were kind of weird. And so the first time I heard him speak, he said, "For all of you newcomers who are here, I hope you're showing up sufficiently miserable." And if you're not sufficiently miserable, I would suggest you go back out into the world and get some more misery, and then come back here, and then you'll be motivated to work this program. Sarcastic? Yes. Funny? Yes. But there actually was some truth to that. I believe it. I'm actually grateful that I showed up so miserable, so desperate, that I had the motivation to change. I was willing to change. And without that willingness, I know I wouldn't have gone anywhere with this program. I needed that desperation. I needed that willingness. 2011 rolled around, and I didn't have a plan. I just knew that I was willing. I was open. And early in 2011, a sequence of events started that I could not have predicted, I could not have planned. I had nothing to do with it. I was just willing and paying attention to whatever came my way. In over a three-month period of time, between May and August of 2011, there's a whole series of connecting the dots that occurred. And I look back at these events, and every one of them had to happen in the same sequence that it did, in the time that it did. I needed all of these events to happen. And it amazes me still to realize that it happened in 3 months without me being in charge. It started with my counselor. I had one of those counselors at the time where I would go in there and he'd say, "How are you doing?" And for the next 55 minutes, I would be just unloading on him. He rarely said anything in my counseling sessions. I don't think I learned much from that counselor either. It was just me dumping my gripes to the counselor. And being married to an alcoholic and with my marriage tanking badly, I just went in there and griped and whined all the time. I think he got tired of listening to me, and he suggested that I go to an Al-Anon meeting. And I didn't know what an Al-Anon meeting was. If there's anybody here who doesn't know what Al-Anon is, it's for families of alcoholics. And to this day, with my atheist background, I'm surprised that I went, but I did. Went to my first Al-Anon meeting, and here's all this God stuff. And they got the 12 steps up on the wall, and there's God, 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 God damn. And I almost didn't go back, but somebody, somewhere in the meeting, they said, "Try 6 meetings before you make up your mind." I thought, okay, I can do that, but this isn't going to work for me. So one of my early Al-Anon meetings, I decided I was going to share. And I was essentially going to challenge the group with my share. I told the group that I'm an atheist. I don't know what I'm doing here. I have no idea what I'm doing. My counselor said to come. I don't see how this program can help me, but here I am. And much to my surprise, after the meeting, 3 members of that Al-Anon group came up to me and said, "We are all atheists, and this program can help you." I wasn't expecting that. And they were right. They were right. I went to another Al-Anon meeting early on. I met a woman there who I thought was a newcomer to the meeting. I subsequently learned that was the one and only time she went to that meeting. So if I hadn't been to that meeting that night, I would not have met her. And from that one person, from that one meeting, I received 4 gifts. 4 gifts in one night. I first, and this was in talking to her after the meeting, I learned the term codependency. For some reason, the term codependency had escaped me my entire life. I had no idea what codependency was. But here's this woman I just met. She's telling me about codependency. Second gift I got from her, she told me about CODA. I'd never heard of CODA. She suggested I try a CODA meeting. The third gift I got from her, she told me she was dealing with alcoholism with a relative, and she recommended an addiction counselor over in Portland for me. And I thought the addiction counselor might be able to help my wife. And she also told me about an addiction recovery program in Kentucky. And when she told me about that program, I was thinking, well, that sounds like something good for my wife too. four gifts. So I called and made an appointment with the addiction counselor. Turns out she was pretty high priced, $225 an hour. I had a two-hour appointment with her. I spent most of that 2 hours complaining about my wife and my history with her and her drinking. And at the end of the 2 hours, she said, "Well, we might be able to do something for your wife, but in the meanwhile, you need to know that you are highly codependent." And there was that word again, codependent. What the heck is that? She also suggested that this program in Kentucky that I wanted my wife to go to, she suggested that I would benefit from it, perhaps more than my wife would. Well, I walked out of there pretty pissed off. I just wrote a check for $450 wanting to fix my wife, wanting to get an intervention, wanting to send her off to this program where she could be fixed, and only to be told that I have a problem and I should go to that program. By the time I got home, I got over my anger. I was curious about this codependency stuff. What the heck is codependency? So I started Googling that. I went to the website for this recovery program in Kentucky and started reading about their program. Their program treats all addictions with a focus on codependency. Their belief, which is now my belief, is that codependency is the underlying cause of every addiction. And even if you get sober or clean in your addiction, if you haven't dealt with your codependency, you're probably going to find another addiction to take its place. And I believe that to be true. So I started to be more open-minded. I figured if I just paid $450 for some advice, perhaps I should take the advice. I called the program in Kentucky. I talked to them. 2 weeks later, I was in Kentucky in a 28-day residency program for treating addicts with codependency. 28 days, group sessions, counseling, mandatory 12-step meetings every evening. Those 28 days, I was going to Al-Anon meetings, AA meetings, Narcotics Anonymous meetings, Adult Children of Alcoholics meetings, Sex and Love Addicts meetings. It was a real eye-opener to me. I'm living with people with serious addictions. And I realized I have my own addiction. I have a relationship addiction. It's my primary addiction. And my addiction was no different than any other substance addiction. I believe they're all the same. The root cause, we have some inherent emptiness, loneliness, sadness, you name it, but something just isn't right with us, and we need something to make us feel better, and that's where the addictions come in. It can be food, drugs, alcohol, gambling, shopping, you name it, any of those things that temporarily make us feel better. For me, a relationship temporarily made me feel better. But I didn't know how to pick a partner. I was not emotionally healthy. I would pick inappropriate partners and then eventually wonder why the relationship was failing. Shortly after my return from Kentucky, they gave me I learned this is common of most recovery centers, that they send you home with what they call 90 and 90, where you're asked to do 90 12-step meetings in 90 days. And being a pretty disciplined person, I did that. I made my own, this statement comes from Robin Norwood, and many of you are familiar with this. Robin Norwood, as part of her 10-step recovery program, she says to make your own recovery your highest priority in your life, and that's exactly what I did. I came home from that program in Kentucky. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I started reading all kinds of books, anything I could get my hands on. I was reading books on alcoholism, on addiction, on codependency, on relationships. I'm grateful that I was retired. I had the time. And I used that time. For the first year, I wasn't doing anything but devoting myself to my own recovery. It was that important to me. To me, it felt like life and death. There was a counselor in the program in Kentucky who one day said, "Codependency can kill you." And I challenged her on that. I said, "Come on, I agree, codependency is a serious issue. I'm starting to get that, but where do you come off saying that it can kill you? And I wish I had a recording of her response, because I'm not going to remember a third of the things she rattled off. But she started saying things like, if you're codependent, you could be so depressed that you take your own life. If you're codependent, you could be so distracted that you have an accident driving and die. If you're codependent, you could be in an unhealthy relationship with a person who kills you. I thought all these things were pretty radical, but the more I thought about it, like, no, that's true. I've been in relationships where I think I'm lucky I wasn't killed. Came close at times. So I finally started to agree that, yeah, codependency is pretty serious stuff. I refer to my program back in Kentucky as my spiritual kick in the ass, and it was. For a person who was an atheist, I pretty much lumped the word spirituality in with religion, with God. To me, it was just all jumbled up together. I never considered myself to be a spiritual person, although in looking back, I realized that in many ways I have led my life spiritually. I've been honest, hardworking. But I started to develop a sense of what spirituality really was. So how has CODA helped me? When I came back from Kentucky, within 2 months, I had a sponsor. I was in a step study group. Most of the members here tonight, and I'm so happy that they're here tonight. We met every Sunday evening for a year, 2 hours. And it was an amazing experience. It became obvious to me early in that step study group that it basically was 7 women and me. And I'm sure the ladies remember we had one of our early meetings, we talked about this. I offered to leave the group. I didn't want to leave the group, but I offered to leave. I didn't want them feeling uncomfortable. But by then, we knew each other well enough that we were starting to trust each other, starting to like each other. And I'm grateful to this day that all 7 of the women encouraged me to stay, and I did. And I realize today that by working the steps, I needed to work the steps with a group of women because I had all of these relationship issues, 4 failed marriages. I didn't know how to have a relationship with a woman. And here was my opportunity to spend a year meeting with 7 like-minded women who wanted healthy, loving relationships themselves. They wanted to do the work. They were willing. To me, it was just yet another gift of my recovery. The more we trusted each other, the more we opened up with each other, we were able to explore things, our deepest secrets. And for the first time in my life, with those 7 women, I learned what a truly emotionally intimate relationship is like. I didn't know what that was like until that step study group. I was able to open up to these women and share stuff that I've kept hidden my whole life, and they accepted me, they loved me. And in turn, they opened up in the meeting, sharing things with me that I know had to have been difficult for them to share. And yet, by hearing their shares, what I was hearing was, you trust me. You wouldn't be saying those things if you didn't trust me. You must trust me, or you wouldn't be opening up like that. So that was my first taste of intimacy. I'm just profoundly grateful for that experience. By working the steps, we dug back into our childhood. In looking at my childhood, I considered it a normal childhood. I had loving parents. There's no question my parents loved me. There were no substance addictions with my parents, no smoking, no drinking, no physical abuse. By all appearances, it was a pretty perfect family, but it wasn't. My mom was an overachieving, critical perfectionist. And I could never make Mom happy. No matter hard as I might try, I could never make Mom happy. She was very critical, very judgmental. And to make matters worse, my mom was a Christian Scientist. And those of you not familiar with Christian Science, it's a faith-based healing concept. We don't need doctors. And I was made to go to Sunday school from earliest ages into my teen years. I resented that every step of the way. I didn't understand what they were trying to teach me. I thought it was a confusing, weird religion, and I still think that way. For a child to be raised in that religion, it just messed me up. By the time I was a teenager, I was resentful of my mom for making me go. I was resentful of the religion. I was resentful of God. It wasn't working for me. I put up with a number of childhood diseases, a couple of injuries. I broke my nose and went untreated. My sister fell, had a real nasty cut on her head, went untreated. A lot of resentment there. Because I couldn't make my mom happy, especially with my schoolwork, I reached a point, by the time I was in high school, I got tired of even trying. Nothing was good enough with my mom. I got tired of trying. As a result, I barely made it through high school. I was in the lower third of my class. If I had failed one course in my final semester of my senior year, I wouldn't have graduated. I needed every credit. I did poorly in high school. When I graduated, my parents made it clear that I was not college material. I had not applied myself. I wasn't good enough. And they suggested I join the military because they weren't going to send me to college. So I left home 3 months after I graduated from high school, scared to death. I joined the Air Force. I was feeling I was a total failure because my parents reminded me of that repeatedly. If it wasn't for the military, I don't know what I would have done. As it turns out, the military was the perfect next step for me. I got electronics training, computer training. That all led to my career, and I'm grateful for that experience. The Air Force thought I was a pretty good person, actually. And it's odd to say that because I didn't really like the Air Force, but the fact is the Air Force accepted me and liked me and rewarded me in ways that my parents never did. And CODA has helped me identify my codependent traits related to my marriages. CODA helped me understand that I picked emotionally unavailable partners whom I wanted to rescue. I know now that I've always been a rescuer. My pattern has been that I would be attracted to a woman for mysterious reasons, which I now know that we were both equally codependent, equally needy. And I would recognize characteristics in the woman that areas where she needed help. And I thought, I think I can help her there. And not only can I help her there, but I'll bet she'll be really grateful. And how do you think that turned out? Because of my codependency, because of my insecurity, because I wasn't well nurtured and supported by my parents, because I was criticized by my parents, I never felt that I was enough. I always felt I needed to do more. I had to prove myself to everybody. I needed to be in control. I needed to be right. That applies to my marriages, to my work environment. I learned that these are pretty typical characteristics of a codependent. A lot of it stems from our insecurity. If we aren't well-nurtured, properly nurtured as children, we end up emotionally stunted and afraid. I always look to my wife to make me happy. I was always looking to something external to make me happy. After this divorce, next time I'm going to find somebody who will make me happy and who won't push my buttons like my last wife did. It was always her fault. I was very critical and judgmental at work. I had very few coworkers who liked me. And it makes perfect sense today why that was. I learned that I certainly was not accepting responsibility for my role in the failure of my marriages. And because of my codependency, because of my insecurity, because of my fears, I was afraid to be alone. Because of my relationship addiction, tied in with that, I was afraid to be alone. And every time a relationship would end, every time a marriage would end, I didn't want to be alone. My pattern was, I would move out, file for divorce, and within 2 weeks, I'm out looking for my next partner. I mean, the ink hasn't even dried on the divorce papers. And I'm out looking for another partner. I did not like living alone. I was afraid of living alone. So what have I learned in CODA? Primarily, first and foremost, and a good CODA friend of mine reminded me of this, when I showed up here, I learned that I'm not alone. I'm not alone. That this is a safe, non-judgmental place to be. That I'm accepted just as I am. I'd never had an environment like that, where I could come into a room and I could share, listen to other people share, and be no criticism, no judgment. In fact, total acceptance. I've learned here what love is all about. I feel loved in these rooms. In the last 4 years, I've learned to live alone. I'm not in a romantic relationship, and I'm not lonely. In fact, I feel more loved and peaceful than I ever have, and I am not in a relationship and living alone and liking it. I've learned that I used to build walls around me, a facade to protect me, because I was afraid you wouldn't like me. I believed that if you knew what was going on in my head, if you knew the thoughts that I had, if you knew the beliefs that I had, quite simply, you wouldn't like me. You wouldn't be my friend. And therefore, like a lot of good codependents do, we build these walls around us. It's a facade. The wall goes up, we're protecting ourselves, we're pretending to be somebody that we're not in a desperate attempt to be liked, to be loved. And the irony of that, I now understand, the irony of that is that by building these walls, we're not only blocking, we think we're protecting ourselves, but we're not only blocking out what we think is a threat to us, but we're preventing joy and happiness from coming to us. All we've done is wall ourselves off from humanity. That's why I ended up a loner. That's why I was so skeptical, so critical. I isolated myself. I was protecting myself. But in the process, not allowing myself to connect with people, not allowing joy and happiness into my life. I've learned in CODA that bit by bit, as I take down those walls and become willing to be vulnerable, as the wall comes down, as I start to become more authentic, more vulnerable, that the miracle happens for me, that I start to connect with people in ways that I never connected before. It's a connection. To me, it's just joyous and wonderful, and it's just what love is all about. And I've never experienced that prior to learning these lessons in CODA. And once those walls are coming down, as I start to connect with people, if I'm vulnerable with you, and you in turn are vulnerable with me, and we share back and forth, we develop a bond. I mean, to me, that's what intimacy is all about. For me, what I've learned in these rooms, in CODA, these special relationships that I have, we are modeling for each other what healthy relationships should be all about. Even though I'm not in a romantic relationship, I have so many close, intimate relationships with men and women in this program that have shown me the importance of being open and authentic and being vulnerable and the way that we connect. And because of that experience, I now know going forward what to look for in a romantic relationship. I know what to look for. In the past year, I've done a little bit of dating, and I have this awareness that I never had before. I have discernment that I never had before. I sometimes see things that I immediately recognize as red flags, like, whoa, I think I need to pay attention to that. I don't allow myself to get into relationships when I learn, when I figure out that, no, I've been down this path before and I'm not going there again. My therapist helped me with a concept that she refers to as the emotional vessel. And I like sharing this because, again, it refers to that feeling of emptiness that we have. I realized that my emotional vessel was running on empty most of my life. I had nothing to give. My therapist and CODA helped me understand the importance of being around people who are like-minded and positive, and how we can feed off each other's positive energy. And the more I'm around people like that, the more I absorb that energy. And as I absorb that love and absorb that energy, I literally feel my emotional vessel filling up to the top. And over the last 4 years, that's what has happened for me. My emotional vessel has filled up. And as my therapist points out, once my emotional vessel is filled, if something happens to me in my life that takes me off course, something negative, I've got energy to spare. If I need to, I can drain 10% off of my emotional vessel to get me through a crisis or to help a friend in need. And I still have a lot of positive emotional energy left in my vessel to sustain me. I had a profound experience with my mom. I've told this story a couple of times, so some of you have heard it. But so profound. A couple of years ago, I wanted to share with my mom. She was 91 years old at the time. She's 93 today, still living. Keeping in mind this relationship I had with my mother, always critical, always judgmental, could never make mom happy. I clearly see her as the source of most of my codependency. And I've clung to a lot of resentment over the years. As I was starting to get the benefit from the program, I was visiting my mom, and I wanted to share with her a little bit about what CODA was doing for me, but I didn't want to go into detail. I didn't mention the program by name. I didn't tell her it was a 12-step program. I simply told her that it was a support group that encouraged healthy and loving relationships. And my mom asked how that works, and I said, well, at our meetings, we share with each other, and we share personal things, and we share our experience, strength, and hope. And we learn from each other. We learn from each other. We inspire each other. And I happened to mention to my mom that part of the program, we dig back into our history, including our childhood, to see what influenced us from our past. And as I'm telling my mom this story, I could see that she was thinking. And she said, you know, since you shared that with me, and it's very personal, she said, I feel like sharing something with you. She said, this is something that I have never shared in my life. She said when she was 9 years old, She was visiting a girlfriend's house, and she saw a quarter on the table, and she took the quarter. And I quickly did the math. My mom was born in 1921, 9 years old. This was 1930. This was the beginning of the Great Depression. And stealing a quarter was a big deal during the Depression. So the next day, the neighbor comes over to my mom's house, asks my mom's father if he knows anything about the missing quarter. Her father, my grandfather, confronted my mom. My mom denied having any knowledge of the quarter, and the neighbor left. A little while later, my mom, feeling guilty, confessed that she took the quarter to her mom, thinking that her mom would keep it in confidence. But her mom told her dad. And when her dad found out, he grabbed... This is my mom telling the story now. And I'm hearing it for the first time. When her dad found out, he grabbed her, dragged her into the bathroom, and grabbed this leather strap that was used for sharpening a razor. And he beat my mom with that leather strap. And my mom went on to say that she lived in fear of her dad. And she said that her dad would come home from work every night and start drinking beer. And he would drink beer after beer until he passed out. And my mom said she and her sisters were afraid every night because when he would eventually wake up again, it was just unpredictable as to what he might do. Sometimes verbally abusive, sometimes physically abusive. And as my mom's telling me this story, the most amazing thing was happening in front of my eyes. In watching my mom, it looked like she was physically getting smaller and smaller. She was pulling herself in, making herself smaller, hunching down. And I started to see a frightened, scared 9-year-old girl in front of me, not my 91-year-old mother. And my mom started crying. She said, "I was so scared. I was so scared." I went over and hugged my mom, tried to comfort her. Felt like I was comforting a little girl. And in that moment, in that experience, everything came tumbling down into my head, an awareness of where all this family dysfunction came from, where this codependency came from. I realized my mom has been hiding this secret her entire life. And now for the first time in her life, at the age of 91, she was willing to share it with me because I was willing to share a little bit with her. And realizing that, holy crap, I thought there was no alcohol in my family, but now I know that there was. My grandfather, who I knew and trusted, was a rageaholic, alcoholic, and my mom grew up in that environment. I now, in that moment, I knew instantly where all of her issues came from. I knew where her codependency came from. I knew where her criticism came from. I knew she was always doing the best she could, but that she had this horrible secret buried inside that was just influencing her whole life. And in that moment, I was able to let go of every resentment I ever had towards my mother. It just evaporated. I'm so grateful for that particular experience. My mom and I have had a special connection ever since. Every time we talk about things that are personal, we share. I'll always be grateful that my mom lived long enough for me to discover this program. I also made peace with my dad before he died last year. while working the steps, I made amends with my dad. And in the process, I was able to let go of my resentment towards my dad as well. When my dad died, I was very much at peace last year. I knew that I had established a connection with him that I never had before. And again, I was grateful that he lived long enough that I was able to make my amends with my dad. In this program, like I said, I learned to forgive my parents, but most importantly, I learned to forgive myself. I was hard on myself. Self-critical, self-judgmental. Even though I was a very critical person, nobody was more critical of me than me. I've learned to let that go. In this program, I've been able to shift my thinking from negative thinking to positive thinking. I was such a negative, skeptical, critical person that easily 90% of the time I had something negative going on in my head. Easily 90% of the time. Today that's virtually non-existent. Virtually non-existent. I've shifted my thinking completely to the positive. I'm encouraged by people who've only known me a year or two, and they say, "Oh, you're such a positive person." And I love hearing that. It's true. I am a positive person. But I wasn't. I wasn't. I needed CODA to shift that. That was a major shift for me. And I'll always remember where the shift occurred for me, shifting from negative to positive. 2 years ago, I was going through a divorce, and it was pretty difficult. And we needed to divide our assets 50-50. And my attorney drew up a spreadsheet, and he said, "Okay, here's all your assets. And we've got two columns over here. We've got your wife's column and we've got your column. Let's divide these up so they look 50-50. And this turned out to be an ongoing, frustrating experience because we would draw up the spreadsheet to where I thought it was 50-50, send it over to her attorney, and they would come back with all kinds of complaints like, "No, that's not 50-50. And I was getting so frustrated in the process. But one day, thanks to CODA, thanks to working the steps, it dawned on me that I was focused on one column on that spreadsheet, her column. That was the only column I was looking at. And to me, that column visually represented what I'm losing in this relationship. It was totally negative thinking. That column is everything that I'm losing. And one day, I shifted my gaze over to my column and paid more attention to it. Like, wait a minute, what's in my column? And I closely studied what was in my column. And I realized, oh, that's not so bad. Yeah, it's only half, but that half is enough. I realized there's enough in my column that I can live comfortably. I don't have to go back to work. I kind of like my retirement. I realized I won't have to go back to work. I'll be okay. I have a pension. And I realized it was enough. It absolutely was enough. I didn't need more than what was in my column. And for me, that was a dramatic shift in thinking. Instead of focusing on the negative, I was focusing on the positive. And that worked so well for me. Once I started focusing on my column, the divorce got simple. My anxiety went away. My resentments went away. We were able to resolve things quickly. For me, it was such a perfect example of what a different attitude can make that I've just adopted that ever since. Like, nope, I'm not going to look at that negative stuff. I'm going to focus. I know it's there. I know I can't always ignore it, but I'm going to keep focused on the positive stuff. I've learned that I always have healthy choices available to me. Always, always have choices available to me. At one point about a year ago, it popped into my head. I mean, most of us have used GPS in our cars or on our phones. It occurred to me about a year ago that CODA is my personal GPS, that it tells me when I'm off course. I know every GPS is a little different. Mine, if I make a wrong turn and I glance at the screen, it says recalculating. I'm off course. It lets me know I'm off course. But then my car GPS guides me back. And CODA works the same way for me. When I'm off track, I just feel it. Because I have a level of serenity in my life that I'm comfortable with and is the norm for me now, because I don't have this 90% crap spinning in my head all the time, when something comes along that feels like a disturbance, I recognize it right away. Like, whoa, what is that? It's a disturbance. It's my GPS saying I'm off course. And if I pay attention at that point, if I just turn it over, if I listen, if I'm patient, pay attention to my higher power, I'm invariably guided back on course where I need to be. And I don't judge myself for being off course. That just happens. That's part of the deal. Occasionally, we go off course. I've learned to welcome what are called AFGO moments. How many of you are familiar with the term AFGO, A-F-G-O? Okay, a few of you are. I learned this back in Kentucky. AFGO means another effing growth opportunity. And it's a concept that took a while to sink in for me. I had an experience back in Kentucky where a couple of the young women in the program, I was pretty sure that I saw them passing drugs, one to the other. And I went to the clinical director and I said, those two gals, something's going on. I'm pretty sure I saw them passing a bag of drugs. And he asked me if I would be willing to confront the two young women. I said, no, that's your job. And he actually met with me two or three times after that to explain to me. He said, you can try to ignore this, you can try to push it off to somebody else, but the fact is, you witnessed what happened. And if you're willing to face those women in a controlled environment, you know, with a counselor there, he said he would be there. He said, trust me, we will all learn from the experience. I did not want to do it. I resisted this for 3 days. And he kept coming back to me. He said, Jack, this is another one of those AFGOs, trying to convince me that there was a benefit to it. I didn't see the benefit. And yet I finally gave in, and in a group environment with the counselor, with the clinical director there, he guided us through the process. I told these women what I'd witnessed. We were able to exchange information back and forth. And the bottom line being that when we face anything difficult in our lives, if we choose to bury it or run away from it, we're not going to learn anything from it. I've learned that if I'm willing to face my fears, deal with my frustrations, with my resentments, with my anger, if I'm willing to face that in an open and authentic and loving way, that invariably there's a lesson to be learned. Better than that, there's a gift to be received. I've learned that in any difficult situation in my life, if I just pay attention, there will always, in any negative situation or with any negative person that I'm dealing with, there's always a lesson to be learned, there's always a gift to be received, there's always emotional healing if I'm willing to pay attention. If I'm willing to pay attention. I've learned that codependents at their core are kind, generous, and loving people who are kind, generous, and loving to a fault. And they neglect themselves. I believe that codependency in moderation is a good thing. Sometimes we're too harsh on this codependency thing, like as if the goal is to never be codependent. My belief, my interpretation, is that a moderate amount of codependency is a good thing. In CODA, we learn to moderate our codependent behaviors and to take care of ourselves. And most importantly, I've learned to let go of my need to be in control. I've realized in my life in how many situations I had to be in control all the time. And I've worked on that over and over again to the point where hardly a day goes by, something comes along, like, do I need to be in control of that? Nope. It's amazing how many things I thought I had to be in control of. It was just my fear, my codependency at work. Many of you are familiar with... Am I okay on time?
Yes, I'm keeping your time.
I feel like I've been talking for 2 hours.
You have 10 minutes.
Okay. Many of you are familiar with Melody Beattie. Melody wrote a book back in the mid-80s called Codependent No More. I've learned that it's probably the first significant book written that dealt with codependency. And she subsequently wrote a daily meditation book called The Language of Letting Go, which I know many of you are familiar with. And it's just, to me, it's an ongoing source of inspiration. So dealing with my issue of control, she has one of her daily meditations. It's called Control. I'd like to read it. Many of us have been trying to keep the whole world in orbit with sheer and forceful application of mental energy. What happens if we let go, if we stop trying to keep the world orbiting and just let it whirl? It'll keep right on whirling. It'll stay right on track with no help from us, and we'll be free and relaxed enough to enjoy our place on it. Control is an illusion, especially the kind of control we've been trying to exert. In fact, controlling gives other people, events, and diseases, such as alcoholism, control over us. Whatever we try to control does have control over us in our life. I have given this control to many things and people in my life. I have never gotten the results I wanted from controlling or trying to control people. What I received for my efforts is an unmanageable life, whether that unmanageability was inside me or in external events. In recovery, we make a trade-off. We trade a life that we have tried to control, and we receive in return something better, a life that is manageable. Today, I will exchange a controlled life for one that is manageable. I love that. So what keeps me coming back to CODA? Quite simply, it works for me. If this program hadn't worked, I'd have been out of here a long time ago. When I showed up at that first Al-Anon meeting, as skeptical as I was, something had to be proven to me pretty quickly or I wasn't going to come back. But again, I had that gift of desperation. I was miserable. I was willing to try something different. And as foreign and alien as Al-Anon was to me, I quickly sensed that there was something here for me that might work, and I kept coming back, and it has worked. Early on, I picked up on the slogan that says, take what you can use and leave the rest. I love that. I can't argue with that. There's no room for argument. Take what you can use and leave the rest. And I love the way this program allows me to define my higher power any way I want. And I can't argue with that either. I wanted to have an argument when I first showed up. Let me tell you why this God stuff isn't going to work for me. And what I kept hearing was, no problem. Call it whatever, try higher power, anything. We're not here to judge you. We're not here to tell you what your higher power needs to be or look like. I've shared many times in meetings about being an atheist. And I've never, ever been judged or criticized for that. To the contrary, I've had people come up to me and say, thank you for sharing that you're an atheist. I've had people share with me that they have never confessed that they were an atheist, but the fact that I was willing to share that in front of a group, they came up and shared it with me. I love those kind of exchanges. I can't explain to you what my higher power is or how it works. I don't know. To me, my higher power is a mystery, and I love a good mystery. I don't need to know any more about my higher power than I already do. I know that if I let go of my need to control, if I turn things over, whatever I'm turning it over to works for me. My problems, half the time my problems just evaporate on their own. Like, why was I so worried about all those problems when half of them just kind of go away? The problems that don't get resolved quickly, if I'm just patient and turn it over, I find that the solutions come to me. I don't have to have a plan. I don't have to force it. The solutions just keep coming to me. To me, that's my higher power at work. I have no idea how that works. Total mystery to me, and it works for me. Along the way, I've picked up some favorite quotes that I like. First one is a definition of codependency that I've always liked. Codependency is when I take your temperature to determine how I feel. For me, that's a good summary of codependency. Be more concerned with you than I am with me. Number two, don't believe everything you think. That used to be a big problem with me. Number three, pain is inevitable. Suffering is always optional. Number four, control is wanting someone else to make me feel comfortable. Number five, an expectation is a premeditated resentment. Number six, I'm not telling you that this program is easy. I'm telling you that it's worth it. Number seven, this isn't so much a learning process as it is an unlearning process. And number eight, embarking on a spiritual journey will not stop bad things from happening, but it will help you find the strength to overcome them. And that last quote brings me to where I am today. Bad things still happen, but now I have the tools and the resources and the friends and a higher power to guide me and to relieve me of my anxiety. I have strength and hope and serenity. I encountered a piece a couple years ago that I guess would be classified as poetry. I've learned in CODA that some poetry doesn't rhyme. This piece was originally called She Let Go. I just modified it for me. It's He Let Go. He let go. Without a thought or a word, he let go. He let go of fear. He let go of the judgments. He let go of the confluence of opinions swarming around his head. He let go of the committee of indecision within him. He let go of all the right reasons. Wholly and completely, without hesitation or worry, he just let go. He didn't ask anyone for advice. He didn't read a book on how to let go. He didn't search the scriptures. He just let go. He let go of all of the memories that held him back. He let go of all the anxiety that kept him from moving forward. He let go of the planning and all the calculations about how to do it just right. He didn't promise to let go. He didn't journal about it. He didn't write the projected date in his day timer. He made no public announcement and put no ad in the paper. He didn't check the weather report or read his daily horoscope. He just let go. He didn't analyze whether he should let go. He didn't call his friends to discuss the matter. He didn't do a five-step spiritual mind treatment. He didn't call the prayer line. He didn't utter one word. He just let go. No one was around when it happened. There was no applause or congratulations. No one thanked him or praised him. No one noticed a thing. Like a leaf falling from a tree, he just let go. There was no effort. There was no struggle. It wasn't good and it wasn't bad. It was what it was, and it is just that. In the space of letting go, he let it all be. A small smile came over his face. A light breeze blew through him, and the sun and the moon shone forevermore. I love that. And as I wrap this up, I briefly want to talk about the importance of the Serenity Prayer to me. CODA and the Serenity Prayer keep me sane. I need CODA every day. I need the Serenity Prayer every day. I heard a recovery speaker a couple years ago talking about the Serenity Prayer, and he pointed out that in referencing things that we can change and things that we can't change, he said there are three things we can change. I can change my thinking, I can change my attitude, and I can change my behavior. And I can clearly say today that thanks to CODA, I have changed my thinking, I have changed my attitude, I have changed my behavior. And the speaker went on to say there are three things that you can't change, ever. I can't change the past. I can't change the truth. And I can't change you. And I remind myself of that all the time. And while I was in my program in Kentucky, every day we used a version of the Serenity Prayer that was called the People Version of the Serenity Prayer. Some of you probably heard it. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, courage to change the person I can, and wisdom to know that person is me. And finally, I'd like to read another poem called The Journey. On my computer, I have a folder called My Journey, and everything relating to my recovery and CODA and 12-step and relationships goes into that folder called My Journey. And along comes this poem called The Journey by Mary Oliver. One day, you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough in a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. My name is Jack. I'm a grateful member of CODA. Thank you.